woods. While I was at the park, you know, don't take your 2020 vision for granted. If you have 2020 vision, don't take it for granted. It is a privilege that few have. If you have the luxury of having clear vision, overall, oh, and what I mean by going into this little segment about the vision is that when I say that I, am a very low level, like level one, not even level one, maybe like level zero birder, is that I don't use a pair of binoculars when I bird. If you are a regular birder and you hear me say this, you might be like, what is wrong with you, Leslie? Are you well? That's not how you do the birding. In my opinion, it's okay. It's fine. Because I'm mostly just here to appreciate basking in the presence of birds. I'm not out here trying to identify and go Ash Ketchum on these birds, you know? I'm not being the bird Pokemon master. I'm not trying to catch them all, right? I'm just listening to these cute little bird sounds and looking around me, thinking that life is great whenever I am able to identify in a bird which I commonly do not see, which is not often. Usually have to rely on the Merlin app. But I'm not trying to do anything fancy. I do think that before the summer months hit, I should probably make a concerted effort to invest in a pair of semi-good binoculars, though it would make going to some of these like little nature excursions a little bit easier when I'm looking for birds, because sometimes they do not come around you within the distance of the naked eye. Sometimes birds are up in the tall, tall trees and they refuse to come down. Or sometimes they're really far away on the other side of the marsh and you want to double check if that's a great blue heron, but the only tool you have is the zoom on your phone camera. And your phone is not that new. In those cases, having a pair of binoculars, I'm sure, yeah. Wonderful, great. I'll try them. So I really have to, like, make that effort to do so. But I think trying to, like, bring out the, like, sort of critical, nuanced side of Typically Tuesdays into this conversation is why I have been enjoying being in nature for quite a little bit the past year or so. And I think it's because I have decided to myself that I am simply I'm not going to go into nature with any other purpose other than to, like, connect with what is around me. I'm not going out there, again, not adding to my Pokedex of birds or my Pokedex of, like, mushrooms and foraging materials and whatnot. I don't have to know anything is what I'm trying to say to you. If you are a naturist and you're listening to me talk, or if you're just like a person who like likes being outdoors and identifying things, you might be like, Leslie, what is wrong with you? Wow, really scrutinizing me throughout this entire episode. But here's the thing. I think at some point in my early childhood, maybe in my early childhood, or maybe a little bit after, the concept of being in nature started to sound a little bit more colonial every time I heard somebody talk about it. The goal and need and purpose to go out into nature to challenge oneself, to conquer something either within oneself, like a skill or a fear or some material, actually some resource in nature, also subconsciously made me wary of going out there into the woods. And of course, that's not true of every person who's like a nature nerd. Obviously, that's not true. I think somehow some of the mainstream, discourse, but some of the mainstream like implicit ideas about like why one should go into nature alienated me from my desire to actually connect with the land. More on that later, I think, because I've been talking a lot. I think it's time for some music. We're going to go into it with some new VanCon. Wow, we've got a lot of new VanCon this week. Again, so wonderful. We love her on this show. We love her at the station. This is Shade Awele off of her debut EP. I know this is different. I know this is true. Your brown eyes are telling me just what to do. And I'm not gonna lie. I want you. Wanna make it a fit. Which is called Intuition. This is If All We Have. Let's get into it. Something deep as water, something sweet as home. Be my superpower, precious as a stone. Sunsets turn into sunrise, all the reasons why. You could be my once in a lifetime. But if all we have is tonight, give me all your fair and my love. I'll cherish your love like the light. Give me all your fair and my love. And if we make it to the morning, it's bigger than passion, it's bigger than me. Something about the way you latch on makes me dream of what this could be, of what this could be. It's never been easy, but just maybe we'll leave the past behind. Toxic energy, maybe we'll be something deep as water, something sweet as all the sweetest. Be my superpower, precious as a stone. Sunset's turned into sunrise, all the reasons why. You could be my once in a lifetime. I'll cherish all of like the light. Give me all your fair and my love.
mass explosions. Soup too hot, ice too cold, grass too green, sky too blue.
You're never satisfied. Can't love you, I tried. It's been a rough ride, going out of my mind.
Is full of mimicry artists. Stellar's jays, blue-gray gnatcatchers, and European starlings can all imitate the calls of other species of birds. But northern mockingbirds have taken mimicry to a whole new level. Sure, they can mimic other birds, but their repertoire includes more than just bird standards. Mockingbirds can mimic frogs and toads. The mockingbird imitates the calls of not one or two, but 12 species of amphibians found in North America. The mimicry is so good, it's hard to tell frog from bird. Here's the call of a Cope's gray tree frog. Now compare it to the mockingbird's attempt at copying it. Tree frog. Mockingbird. So how does this mimicry benefit the bird? That remains something of a mystery, but scientists think that the females might find it attractive. With such extensive knowledge of the great American songbird book, mockingbirds really are the crooners, or croakers, of the bird world. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Good old Bird Note for you there. That was Bird Note. You're tuned into Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. You just heard The Bug Club with Do It All Again. That was recommended to me by the host of your Thursday hour open mic at 1 o'clock, Sasha. She knows that I'm really into birds, and so she was like, you should listen to this album. It's called Rare Birds. And I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Sasha. Tune into her open mic, by the way, Thursdays at 1 o'clock. Got some great rock and punk music, and of course other stuff, but she really specializes in pulling some great punk stuff. Thursdays, 1 o'clock with Sasha for your open mic hour. Before that, you heard Burning Brains by Tierra Whack off of her latest record, Worldwide Whack. Been really anticipating that one. Love Tierra Whack. Love songs about being mentally ill as well. Of course, here on Typically Tuesdays, that's what we do. Listen, I think one of the reasons why I've been so much more open to like getting into the nature and stuff like that the past little bit is because, like, I'm not saying nature is not real. Like, nature is real. But as feminist scholar Donna Haraway suggests in her, in one of her most incredible work, A Cyborg Manifesto, what humans seem to observe and discover in science, in natural, like hard sciences, is influenced by human culture. And those scientific discoveries, said to be objective and scientific and whatnot, end up influencing our culture and our society. It is this feedback loop, this dialectical between nature and culture, right? So long as human beings are the ones who are writing and making these discoveries, because we're using our human ontology, our human worldviews, to look at science and to look at scientific phenomena, including nature. What very much seems to be the total opposite of culture, which is supposed to be humanly constructed. But when it is human people who are talking about nature with their own human people brains, influenced by their own human people society, you know, there's a question of like ontological fact there, I guess, or what even is fact. No, not what even is fact, obviously. Like, fact is a human construction as well. Okay, we're not going to get into it, but it's a really fascinating idea. And I think that has made me feel a little bit more comfortable in nature. This is coupled with, of course, the incredible work that a lot of Black and Indigenous naturists have been doing around decolonizing the outdoors, I guess, or like knowledge and activities in the outdoors, to help us rework the side of our brain that reminds us that to exist on lands and to exist in nature and to really to be as people, we have to acknowledge that we owe a great deal to the land and we owe a great deal to nature. We exist on it and therefore have a relationship with it. And we should not take that for granted. There's a lot of great work out there being done. I recently read this article that was shared by Robin, who is the host of Roots and Berries every Friday at 12 on 90.1 FM. It was written in the Narwhal, published earlier this year during February, called How Can Birdwatching Reckon With Its Racist History? A lot of really fascinating notes in there discussing, you know, that like some birds are named after literal racists, like literal horrible people in history, for example. And a lot of the practice of birding is also colonial, again, like using the mentality of like almost like a Pokemon master, you know, you can catch them all. Or maybe even this like somewhat more simple idea that like we can know everything about nature, and to be able to obtain this knowledge gives us like a power over it. You know, something in there about, you know, the relationship of knowledge equals power in the colonial sense. We can get into it another day with Edward Said and Orientalism, and how this might apply, I guess. But it just makes me feel a little bit icky, I think, to like think about nature and my relationship to it in that way, because I don't think that I do. I think one of the reasons why, like, in fiction there's this common archetype of like the conflict of humans versus nature, right? And like nature might like wipe out all humans and stuff like that, and you know, that's pretty scary because mortality and death, an apocalypse. But I think also one of the other things that's scary about that, that makes people afraid of it, is that it taps into this maybe somewhat innate and unspoken knowing that human beings and technology, or human technology and stuff, we are really bad at the survival. We are very bad at the adapting. And we're very good at death. Again, I know I said I was not feeling great earlier this hour. This has nothing to do with it. I just do, like, whether or not I am well, constantly think about death. But I think, again, conspiracies, I think that's something to consider. And I think maybe that is why being in nature for me has been kind of healing. Because I know that no matter what happens to human beings, to me, the earth is going to keep rotating. It's going to keep moving on. It's going to do its own thing. It will adapt. It will change. The mountains will still be here. The oceans will still be here. The sky will still be here. It is greater than us. It is greater than me. And I think that's really beautiful. In a morbid way. With that, I'm going to end the show today. again, like, I am well right now. Like, I'm just a little bit sad. But that last part, don't worry about it. I thought about that when I was well, okay? Yeah, go out into nature today. I heard there was a solar eclipse. You know, that is the other thing. Sailor Moon told us that when there's a solar eclipse, bad things would happen. Be careful, protect yourself. I hope you did. Anyways, a very chaotic end to today's show. And I'm going to finish off with a song. So last week and the week before, you and I talked all about the Sakamichi groups, and I opened up about my love for Hinata Saka 46. You've heard about it before, but not maybe to the extent that you heard last week. If you missed that, go check it out on the CJSF archive for typically Tuesdays. But my favorite member, Kyoko, is graduating. Her last week of activities is this week. She's put 8 years into Hinata Saka 46. She made me fall in love with the group. I know that even when she's gone, I'm going to continue to support Hinata Saka and also support her in this exciting new part of her career in entertainment. This is my way of saying thank you, Kyoko. You're great. And this is Kyoko's graduation song from Hinata Saka 46. I hope you enjoy it. I'll talk to you very soon. This is Hinata Saka 46 with Okuni Suzuki.